Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Our guest today is Republican State Representative Matt Gobler. Gobler represents the 75th District, which includes Elk County and parts of Clearfield County. He was elected to the State House in 2008. Representative Gobler serves on the Environmental Resources and Energy Subcommittee, on Parks and Forests, on the State Government Subcommittee on Federal-State Relations, and on the Tourism and Recreational Development Committee. WPSU's Greg Peterson talks with Representative Gobler about legislative issues as the state government nears the June 30th budget deadline.
Representative Matt Gobler, thank you for joining us this morning here on Take Note.
Thank you, Greg, for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Let's start with transportation, infrastructure. There was some movement on the bills yesterday. There's some contention about adding an extra $100 to speeding tickets. There's other ways to get revenue with much of the road and bridge repairs all in need at the same time. How are we going to fund all of it?
Well, I think that it's very important that we make sure that we bring together a transportation funding plan that is fair. And I'll refer back to when I first came into office in 2008. One of the big issues was the question of whether or not to toll Interstate 80. And at that point, I was very strongly opposed to that, and I still am. And it was because I was concerned about what the impact would be on local jobs, what it would do to change the economic reality of our region for job creators, for folks in the area. And I think that similar concerns come up when we're talking about transportation funding plans. But I will say that I'm encouraged that what we're talking about is not just a specific geographic plan where we were going to hit one road in this state, change
right.
the economic reality for that region, and try to distribute the money elsewhere. What we're talking about here is how do you account for the fact that the cost of things changes over time? And we unfortunately have a transportation tax system in this Commonwealth that is technically behind the times. So I think that the need to update that certainly is out there. But the question is, how do you do it fairly? And the thing that I have a problem with is when government starts to – it's a phrase I think I coined, but I'm not sure. It's governing by cliff, right? The idea that you push off a problem so far that you have to jump up a cliff in order to correct it. And I think that when you do that, it has devastating effects on job creators, people that are seeing costs go up. It also has a devastating impact on family budgets. So I think whatever we do, it has to be tailored in such a way where it allows us to have sustainability going forward, but we're not hitting people in the pocketbook so severely that it changes their economic reality. So,
well, what do you think is the solution? How do we get out of the funds to get out of this really huge infrastructure deficit that we have with so many bridges being deficit in Pennsylvania? More bridges are in structurally poor repair than any other state in the union.
I think that there are a number of plans that could give us some sustainability going forward. A constituent actually brought up to me, and I looked into it a little bit, the idea of Virginia had made some tweaks to their plan where they had actually shifted away from the retail and more toward the wholesale side. And what's interesting about when you have the wholesale, what's there similar to our OCFT, is that it does follow along with inflation so that you don't get to a cliff the next time. So I think elements like that are certainly worth talking about. And I think that but I do think that when you look on the other side, one of the parts of the plan of Senate Bill 1 that's currently out there, certain registrations for pickup trucks would go up to $236. Now it would be for 2 years, but to get that bill all at once, I think that's going to be difficult to put into a family budget. So I think that what we need to do is talk about how can we implement sustainability over time, allow inflation to be accounted for, but let's not sock people all at once where we change their economic realities.
You think there's going to be a significant bill come out this year in the next week or so?
I think that there's a lot of talk going on. I'm actually encouraged by some of the discussions I'm hearing from members of the Transportation Committee. I will say that I thought that the $100 surcharge on moving violations I thought was a bit steep. I think that fines are supposed to be for enforcement purposes, not for revenue generation. And I think that there is a lot of conversation that's moving that I think will ultimately get us to a point where maybe we'll we'll have something that that can solve this problem going forward.
What about the privatization of liquor sales? Good thing, bad thing? You think if something's going to happen there?
Once again, I've been encouraged by the conversation that I've been hearing. I do support the idea of getting the state out of the retail business of wine and spirit sales, because I think that government does its best work when it sticks to those core functions that it's supposed to do. And we started with one, transportation. Certainly, you know, you talk about education, you talk about public safety, whether it's police protection, fire protection. When you stick to those things, you can do them really well. When you get into other stuff, I think that this is something that's been long overdue. We don't have state-run grocery stores, and people find their food just fine. And in fact, I think people are happy with their grocery stores. But to have a state-run liquor store, I think, is just kind of one of those idiosyncrasies of our government that is a vestige of the past. And I think it's time to leave them in the past and move toward toward something that will provide the consumer convenience and the proper way to do this going forward.
You just talked a little bit about education, and do you think the state is doing enough in this area? It is a priority. The education funding seems to always be a contentious issue every year. What do you think are the long-term solutions and funding solutions?
Well, I think that any time that you have an element of the state budget that is $10 billion out of a $28 billion budget, it will certainly be a high point of discussion, and it very well should be. And plus, education is the future of our children, so it's not just a dollars and cents thing. It's a question of what is our future, where does our society go, and how are we going to take care of our next generation, you know, which is the most important thing we can think about. And I think that when you look at trying to fund a priority like this, it's important that you do it in a sustainable manner. And I think you know, one of the reasons that education funding has been such a difficult discussion in recent years has been because the federal stimulus funds were a one-time infusion of dollars, and when they went away, that left a significant hole. And I think that that was unfortunately a poor way to govern, to leave ourselves with an unsustainable funding source that then put such a shock into the system. So I think when you look at it, I think that in Pennsylvania we have prioritized state dollars toward education. When you look at the fact that in the last two budgets, there have been more state dollars in education than at any point in the history of the Commonwealth, I think that shows a significant historic investment in education. And the budget that we just passed just last week out of the House included a $100 million increase over last year's historic levels of investment. So I think that when you look at what we've been doing, as a state representative, I have no power to appropriate federal funds, but I do have power to work to make sure that we prioritize our state funds that we have coming in the best way we can in a sustainable manner. And I think that the decisions that we've made in that realm have been responsible and allow us to have a sustainable education system going forward that's going to provide for a thorough and quality education for the next generation of Pennsylvanians.
As part of the educational puzzle, I guess, the Senate Finance Committee just yesterday advanced Senate Bill 922 to put all new state and school district employees into a defined contribution plan, somewhat similar to a 401k. You support that idea?
I think that it is the most responsible thing we can do to limit the risk that's assumed by taxpayers, and also to limit the risk that's assumed by future employees. Because let's face it, we've got a $47 billion unfunded liability in our current pension system, and the blame for that rests solely with politicians. But the problem is we can't go into the politicians' pockets to take that money out. That is money that unfortunately the taxpayers are on the hook for. So if we want to repeat another $47 billion error, then we can stick with the status quo. But if we want to go forward and make sure that we make sure that future that the future employees and future retirees are insulated from the poor decisions that politicians may make, then we can give them control of their own accounts through a 401k style plan. I think it's a responsible thing to do. And I also think that it's important to dispel some of the myths that have been out there about what happens if you do that. There have been a number of people that are saying that that current employees and current retirees might be somehow put at risk if you shift new employees into a new system. And that's completely not the case. I serve on both the state government committee in the House as well as the finance committee, and both of these committees have been looking into these issues. And just yesterday we had a public hearing of the state government committee looking at pension proposals that are out there. And one of our testifiers did a phenomenal job explaining how all of these plans, really, now we were talking about a few bills in the House, but they have a lot of similar elements as to what the Senate bill has. But these plans require the state to continue contributing to the current pension fund based on a percentage of the new hire's salaries. And that would be paying toward the unfunded liability or the shortfall we have in the current system. So I think that this is a responsible plan to make sure that new hires can plan for their retirement going forward, that current retirees are made secure and made whole, and current employees continue to have every promise that we made to them. I think that it's the right move, and I'm hoping that we can take swift action on that in the House.
Okay. We know that you're a supporter of the coal industry, and the fortunes in that area have taken a downturn due to the really rock-bottom prices of natural gas and emissions regulations, given the much lower cost of building new gas-fired plants versus coal plants. What do you see as the future for coal in Pennsylvania and in general?
I think that that everything will go through cycles in the economy if government allows industries to continue to exist. Unfortunately, I think that the coal industry, as you had alluded to, has gotten a lot of really difficult regulations that have been thrown onto their plate that has changed their economics and made it very difficult, in addition to the other competitive elements of the market. I don't think that competition or the competitive elements of the market will ultimately be a problem for the coal industry, so long as the government allows the coal industry to continue to operate and to thrive. I think it's important that we do speak out across our area. I've been very impressed with my colleague, Representative Sankey, first-term member from Clearfield, who has very much really worked hard to bring this issue to the forefront. And I've had the pleasure of participating in a number of discussions with him, some of our local economic development groups like the Quihana Industrial Development Corporation that's been working on this issue. I think it's important we speak up. And one of the things we're doing right now is we're asking participants in the coal industry to explain to us some of the technical difficulties that they're encountering and to see how we can help, because none of our towns around here would exist. None of our parents or grandparents would have been able to found these towns and to be here if it wasn't for the jobs that they had through the resource development through the years.
We know that gas is kind of bouncing back in some of the price, and I know there's regulation, but isn't it a matter of maybe a level playing field where gas has to have certain emissions and coal needs to meet those same emissions? Or do you favor separate emission standards for coal-fired versus gas-fired plants?
I can't say that it's an issue specifically, I guess, comparing coal and gas as far as emissions standards go. I can't say it's something that I have a whole lot of technical knowledge on. I would say that continuing to change we seem to keep on getting tougher on coal, and I think that as we do that, we're changing the economic realities for that industry, and I think that's been unfortunate. It's had a negative impact on many of our small family businesses across our area. So I think that everything needs to be looked at from a standpoint of what's the status quo, and what is government trying to do, and what are the negative effects of that. And that's been what I've been hearing from folks in the area.
I also know that you're a proponent of gun rights, and you've cited the U.S. and Pennsylvania constitutions as protectors of those rights, and that's good. Do you believe that citizens should have the right to own assault-type automatic or semi-automatic weapons as well?
Oh, absolutely. I think that the question about what is an assault rifle is something that has been thrown out there, but there's no answer to that except when legislators or when lawmakers, when government tries to change the rules. But you know, when you look back to the old assault weapons ban of the 90s and early 2000s, an assault weapon was what they said it was, which was based on some, you know, cosmetic features of the firearm. You could have two identical firearms mechanically side by side, and because one looked scary, it was an assault weapon, and because the other didn't look scary, it wasn't an assault weapon. So I think that, you know, labels sometimes cloud the debate, but when you really look at it, the question is, should a law-abiding citizen need to ask permission from their government in order to protect or defend themselves? And it comes back down to, in my opinion, a very basic truth. And that is, if somebody is willing to break the law with a firearm, then they'll be willing to break the law to get that firearm. So in my opinion, the more laws we make restricting, prohibiting, or infringing on law-abiding citizens' rights to have guns, the more likely we are to create victims, because we're going to ensure that only those who are willing to commit a crime to get a gun will be the ones that have the guns.
Do you think there are any guns or ammunition types that should be prohibited? Armor-piercing rounds, for example?
Well, I really don't think that that the government prohibiting ownership of certain things by law-abiding citizens, you know, by just creating categories is responsible. I think it goes down a dangerous path.
Okay. What about mandatory background checks? Do you think those are a good idea?
I think that the current background check system that we have certainly does a good job. You know, certainly when it comes to retail sales. But one of the things that I think we need to do better is we need to do better at making sure that an instant check truly is instant. We've got a lot of technical problems with our system where a law-abiding citizen, and not only a law-abiding citizen who's trying to purchase, but also a law-abiding sporting goods shop person. Is ends up on the phone waiting for the Pennsylvania instant check system for 30, 60, 90 minutes to do one transfer. Imagine how terrible it would be if you had to wait 30, 60, or 90 minutes to do a transaction, to do one transaction at the grocery store or at the hardware store. I think that we need to make sure that we do everything we can to make sure that our system is technically efficient, that we make sure that an instant check truly is instant. So I'd like to see us do a better job on the technological side. But I think that certainly for people that go and make retail purchases, for us to make sure that we keep the guns out of the wrong hands, I think that's responsible.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Representative Matt Gobler on Take Note on WPSU. You're on record as being opposed to the Affordable Health Care Act and the federal dollars that would expand Medicaid in the state. With health care costs rising so much more quickly than inflation or just about anything else, how do you think Pennsylvania can provide health care to those in real need?
Well, I think that the Pennsylvania, we already have a Department of Public Welfare in this state that is at a level of $11 billion out of our $28 billion budget. So once again, that is a large budget item. I think that the Pennsylvania has certainly already has programs in place that provide a lot of help to a lot of people. The question is, how far do you expand things and how far can you afford to expand things? And the concern that I have with regard to the proposed Medicaid expansion it really comes down to whether or not we trust that the federal government can follow through on their promises. When you've got a federal government that is nearly $17 trillion in debt, they just kind of stumble from fiscal cliff to fiscal cliff, and they got debt ceiling negotiations going on all the time. Can we really trust that the federal government is going to keep their promise 1 year out, you know, let alone 2, 3, 5, and 10 years out? Allegedly, the Medicaid expansion is supposed to be that the feds pay pretty much the whole bill up front and then a significant percentage going forward. But what that does do is that does obligate the state of Pennsylvania, the people whose tax dollars I have a fiduciary responsibility to, that does obligate us to tie certain of our dollars up that we then no longer have control over. And one thing that I'm very concerned about is that the people of Pennsylvania elect a General Assembly to manage their funds responsibly. And the more and more control we hand over to a far-off federal government, the less control Pennsylvanians will have over their own destiny. And I think that's really where I think the concern is with regard to the Medicaid expansion is that's the one side of it that I guess I see most directly as a state representative. But then you look at the other side of it too. Medicaid generally is not a part of our health care system that gets great results, and you've got it completely compensates the medical providers who provide care. So now you're actually creating financial problems for medical providers, and you're actually going to, in my opinion, create less access for patients as well, because you're going to have more and more doctors that are not going to be able to accept Medicaid as we continue expanding this and not reimbursing the full amount of what it costs to actually provide those services the way Medicaid does.
And doctors are starting to push back in Medicare as well. I mean, it almost sounds like you don't think there should be any federal dollars in health care. It should all be a problem of the state. But that would be unsustainable at all, wouldn't it?
Well, I think that we could get into a much larger discussion about what should the state pay states pay for versus what should the feds pay for, and really what we could get to is a question of what should state tax rates be versus what federal tax rates are. You know, the reason things are funded the way they are is because at the state we collect roughly 3% in income tax and 6% in sales tax, whereas the feds will get 15%, 25%, or 35% of your income. So they've made themselves a bigger part of it. But the problem is, the more you cede control to the feds, the more that you allow one size fits all to make all the decisions, the less quality you get in your services. So I would prefer to see the states have a larger role in trying to provide services. And if there were any way for us to reshift those responsibilities, I think it would be a responsible thing. I think you would get better outcomes in all the states.
So what are your legislative priorities? What's the legislation that you'd like to see made into law in this session?
Well, I will start by saying that somebody who came to this job at a relatively young age, I was elected at the age of 25. One of the things that has been just absolutely critical to me is looking at what's the future of our area going to be. What can we do to make sure that that we can retain young people, create opportunities in our area? Of course, I represent Elk County and northwestern Clearfield County, but all across the central and northern and western Pennsylvania. How can we do a better job of making our communities a place where young people want to settle, raise their families, and have those opportunities? And in order to do that, we need to make sure that we're making every effort to create a better Pennsylvania, not only today and in the immediate future, not only on a two-year election cycle, but going forward for the future of our area. And one thing that I think is I'm very excited about, it's House Bill 493. It's a bill that I authored that reforms some of our debt that we hold in this state. It's a program called the Redevelopment Assistance Capital Program. And it's unfortunately, and it's been abused over the past decade or so. It's been treated like a credit card that as soon as you max it out, you just take out another credit card and max that one out. The debt in that program has risen from $1.5 billion back in the late 90s to a current debt of $4.05 billion. And I think it's important to think about it like a credit card, because every time we make our minimum payment and a little bit of the principal comes off, then we turn around and we reissue that debt in the form of putting more projects out there. But I've been very encouraged to see that in the last 2 years or so, there has been significant strides made in managing this debt more responsibly, managing the programs more responsibly that this debt funds. And so we're at a point now where we can actually bring our debt limit down. And so one of the key points of my legislation is it reduces our debt limit by an initial step of $600 million, from $4.05 billion down to $3.45 billion. And it also creates some accountability tools within the RCAP program, making sure that we define it so that these projects are done for what their intended purpose is, which is job creation and job retention. It creates a transparent review process. It requires these projects to be itemized in a much more specific way. This bill passed the House 194-2 earlier in the year. And now I'm hearing that it is moving in the Senate and has a chance to make it across the finish line. And I'm strongly encouraging the members of the Senate to take up this bill. I think it's one of the best things we can do for the future of our Commonwealth to make sure that we're handing a fiscally sustainable state government to the next generation of Pennsylvanians.
Any indication from the governor that he'll sign it?
I'm encouraged. I do believe that that this would fit with. Of course, I haven't spoken personally with him, but I do believe that the administration and the governor would be willing to support this. And in fact, this would enact into law a number of reforms that that the governor has administratively voluntarily done that he has the flexibility to do, but is not required to do. And I think that it's worked so well that it would make sure to put these into law to make sure that the program continues to be managed effectively going forward.
Any other bills of yours that you're trying to get through the legislature?
Another one I'm working on right now is something that's gotten a little bit of attention lately. It's House Bill 1138, and I love the story behind this bill. I was at a Farm Bureau tour in Elk County in 2011, in Elk County, farming can take a couple of different forms, but timber operators tend to be. They're our form of agriculture. You know, we have some other farms as well, but timber harvesting, lumber production is one of our very important industries. And it was pointed out to me that Pennsylvania has a sales tax exclusion for many industries. Manufacturing, even sawmills, agriculture, but the timber harvesters do not get that same consideration. And I think it's important to think, well, why do we have sales tax exclusions? Because these are items that are being produced that will eventually be sold at retail and will eventually have sales tax collected on them. But if you have sales tax that is compounded into the process all along, then you're having double, triple, quadruple taxation, so on and so forth. So like I said, sawmills already have a sales tax exclusion, but for whatever reason, timber has been left out. So my bill would simply add that timber as well would be excluded. And what that means is that we would simplify the supply chain. We would simplify the accounting process for production of this very important commodity, and we would also make sure that our local producers, who are very small mom and pop family owned businesses, would continue to be competitive and would maybe even be able to rise to the top in competitiveness versus producers in other states. So this bill moved out of the House Finance Committee, I'm hopeful that we can get action on the House floor with it.
We have just about a minute left, and so I'll just ask you, are you still enjoying the work that you got elected to? I'm sure you got into it not knowing exactly what was going to happen, but now you've been there for a few years. Is it what you expected, or is it what change would you like to make yourself to see how things could work better in the state legislature?
Well, I will say that it's just incredibly energizing to have the honor and the privilege to work for 60,000 people who are my friends, neighbors, colleagues, folks in the community. And so I am enjoying it, because when I see the importance of the work we do and how we can work every day to try to represent our communities and make sure that we do the best job we can, it's a job that has meaning.
Representative Matt Gobler, thank you very much for joining us today and Take Note.
Thank you very much.
That was WPSU's Greg Peterson talking with Republican State Representative Matt Gobler, who represents the state's 75th district. For more information about Representative Gobler or to listen to archived interviews with other state representatives, check the links at our website, wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.